And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. It's just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 26th of September. How are you all keeping out there? I do hope you're very well indeed. And what a morning it was. It's kind of damp and breezy and miserable, isn't it? And kind of dark. But anyway, listen, if we have our health, we're doing okay, aren't we? So we are keeping it bright and breezy here for the next 3 hours in the 9 till noon show. We've got loads lined up for you. We're going to be covering all the big topics of the day, of course, highlighting some of the issues that you wish to talk about. And you can get involved with the conversation, trigger your own, by contacting us on the following numbers. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. and if you want to watch the show as well, go to YouTube app Highland Radio Ireland on your mobile devices, your smart TV or your Fire Stick. You can watch us there. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. We're on the X platform across the world, as are we on our YouTube channels. Right, our Facebook channels, I beg your pardon. The Thursday papers this morning, Tyrconnell Tribune today. As calls have been made for a public inquiry into the Chrysler explosion, Donna Harper and Anthony Gallagher, who each lost a child in the tragedy, have told RTE's Prime Time that they need to find the truth behind what happened to their daughters. The request from the families who lost loved ones in Chrysler comes as Gardaí continue to investigate the circumstances of the explosion. Mr. Gallagher said a public inquiry can continue along with the investigation. He stated it's more for public safety, and we do not want any other families to have to go through what they've gone through the last 2 years. And we spoke yesterday on the show extensively to the solicitor instructed by 8 families of deceased people. Darren Mackin, that was on the show yesterday. It's in the second part of the podcast, and well worth listening back to if you have an interest, as we all do in that case. The Donegal News tells us that almost 10,000 people are currently driving on a learner permit in Donegal, or at least they have one. Whether they're driving or not, I suppose, would we know? Plans to crack down on motorists who have held provisional licences for years have been delayed over fears of a surge in driving test applications. It comes as new figures reveal that in Donegal, 9,530 people are currently driving on a learner permit. In June, Transport Minister Eamon Ryan approved a plan for closing a loophole allowing learner drivers to repeatedly apply for a learner permit without sitting a driving test. However, a detailed briefing from the Department of Transport, which was reported in the Irish Independent earlier this week, warned that this would end up causing extra stress on the already overburdened testing system. So almost 10,000 people with a learner permit in this county, and probably thousands. I don't know what percentage of those might actually have an appointment for a test, but it just goes to show how we've found ourselves with this backlog where people are waiting months and months and months to sit their test. The Derry News this morning, a 3-year trauma, substance recovery and mental health project is set to launch across the city and district. The project will deliver a peer support network through community collaboration to promote self-advocacy, develop knowledge and support lifestyle changes for individuals, families and communities. The full story inside that paper today. On to the Nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Times this morning, and they have another story, as is the case with all the papers this week. It's on the Children's Hospital, and the body overseeing the development of the new National Children's Hospital cannot provide assurances that the project will reach completion by June 2025, describing it as a hostage in the negotiation. There's not a single room of that hospital has been completed, can you believe? Yesterday, the National Paediatric Hospital Development Board appeared before the Oireachtas Health Committee to provide an update on the construction of the hospital. David Gunning, chief officer of that body, told politicians construction of the hospital was now at 94%. BAM, the contractor, has informed the board the new substantial completion date will be June 2025, which Mr. Gunning said will facilitate a 2026 opening. However, he expressed caution about that timeline. I would be very reluctant to give the committee any assurances or confidence in the June 2025 timeline, he said, in the absence of the information that we need to look in detail and do a critical analysis. Underpinning that is the question of what resources the contractor is going to employ during the period, he said. So, like, something has to be done here. Someone has to take the bull behind the horns, do we not agree? You know, this was 650 million was the original cost. It's now way, way, way above that. It's in fact 1.6 billion over budget, an awful situation altogether. And yet we have no completion date. And this is critical to, you know, a lot of people didn't like where the hospital was going and access. And we platformed that conversation extensively on this show over the years. But also too, I mean, we must presume if this is going to be a state-of-the-art hospital to provide world-leading care, we must presume that for every moment it's closed, there are potentially children that could have worse outcomes because they can't avail of this facility. And that's one thing I've not heard in all of this. I've heard BAM this and politicians that and board the other. But it's how do we calculate how many children will not have a brighter future or any future at all because they can't avail of the facilities at this hospital? I mean, if this is a massive improvement, world-leading and all that kind of stuff, well, where we are at now, surely there are children who are being disadvantaged by not being able to avail of those services, and they may not be able to avail of those services to 2026. And I just don't really feel, that their voice is being heard in all of this. So that's one story about the spending of public funds. There is another now, because we've talked about the bike shed, and now we have a security shelter, which it's art, the roof of it's art. You might like it, you might not. But it's a security shelter. They're outside car parks and all over the shop. 1.4 million euro they've spent on this security shelter, and it's not actually finished. Tánaiste Mícheál Martin has described the 1.4 million spend on a security shelter at the Department of Finance as ridiculous and called for a fundamental review of the cost. During a sitting of the Oireachtas Finance Committee yesterday, it emerged that the structure, which is located on Merriam Street in Dublin City, cost 1.429 million. John Conlon, the chair of the Office of Public Works, revealed the cost of the shelter when he appeared before the committee answering questions about the Leinster House bike shelter, which cost €336,000. So there's something going on here, and it doesn't matter if it's this government or the next government or even if that government's changed. There is a huge responsibility here, I think, on the powers that be to assure us that public money is being spent responsibly. Like, how can a bike shed that had an initial cost of, you know, just around about 100,000 or whatever it might have been, end up costing 336? How could this, I mean, for those of you who are watching, majority listening, but for those of you who are watching, it is, take the roof off it, it's epoxy perspex glass security shed, 1.4 million, and the price will still go up. Who's overseeing this? You know, how then are we making sure? Look at the overspend we've seen on roads. One road that we know of, it's stuff that we find out about. And every single project seems to have this time overrun and cost overrun. And really, does there not need to be a department specifically, if there's not already, in charge of controlling spending? Signing contracts that means there is an upper limit to how much it can cost. Because this is all of our money at the same time. And I'm sure there's many politicians of many different parties that would agree with that, that we need something to ensure that our money is being spent responsibly. But it also emerged that there's a TD fitness instructor, and this person is going to cost 190k over 4 years. The body that runs Leinster House is planning to spend almost €190,000 on a fitness instructor to help keep TD senators and staff in shape over the next 4 years. The Houses of the Oireachtas Service is seeking tenders for the fitness instructor contract at an estimated €190,000 over 4 years. Once hired, the instructor will operate and manage the Houses of the Oireachtas Service fitness room. The tender says the contract works out at €3,390 a month, excluding VAT, over the course of the initial two-year contract, with options to extend for two more one-year periods. So there you go. We should get a fitness instructor in here. We'll try and get Fionnuala to okay it, maybe. Elsewhere in the Irish Daily Mail this morning, more than 16,000 households are now in receipt of a monthly €800 tax-free payment for hosting Ukrainian refugees, with hundreds signing up every month. People's hospitality now stretches across everything from spare rooms to holiday homes to full properties, with Sinn Féin claiming the scheme is pricing other renters out of the market by those who want the tax-free payment. So presumably, we're seeing rents, average rents here about €1,100 a month in this county, and it's higher in other parts of the county. But there are taxes on that. But you can house refugees for €800 tax free, so that's money straight into your pocket. So I suppose, I don't know the ins and outs, I've never been in that position. So I presume that's more attractive to a renter. So we know there's no rental properties, and I do know anecdotally and personally of lots of Ukrainians that have moved out of hotels into private rented accommodation. And I've said it on the show before, and it's no slight on these people at all, that I would be of the view that clearly that has to be disrupting the availability to some extent, but they need a home as well. It's about fairness and the level of playing field as well, though. If it is more advantageous to host a Ukrainian family than it is a family from somewhere else or an Irish family, that's not a level playing field, is it? And that's not really fair. New figures obtained by the Irish Daily Mail show that as of September 22nd, 16,297 homeowners are hosting Ukrainian refugees. More than 6,000 new hosts signed up this year, rising from 10,198 hosts in January 2024. So that's really quite significant, isn't it? Any views on that? 086 60 25,000. The Farmers Journal this morning. Sweeping changes are to be introduced to the board beer quality assurance schemes from 2025. Minimum lying space for animals and submissions of geotagging photographs of cattle at the time of purchase are among the new measures proposed, the Irish Farmers Journal understands. Yes, sir. Back paying your TV licence. Fair play to you all, you law-abiding citizens. It is good to see if you're in RTE. The public has started paying their TV licence fee again as anger towards RTE has subsided. This is according to the Irish Daily Star. There was a 21.2% rise in payments for July and August compared to the same period last year at the height of the backlash against the broadcaster. The increase was revealed by the Media Minister Catherine Martin in reply to a parliamentary question. She said yesterday, while the decline in TV licence receipts since summer 23 is well documented, we have seen signs of recovery, particularly in the last couple of months. For example, through July and August, there was an increase of 21.2% in TV licence sales compared to the equivalent period in 2023. On to the Sun now. And two bosses at pharma giant Johnson & Johnson yesterday told an inquest they had no stats on how many people died after having their COVID jab. Ex-League of Ireland ace Roy Butler, 23, died on August 17th, 2021, 5 days after getting the Janssen vaccine. Medics have told Cork's Coroner's Court the Waterford lad suffered a catastrophic intracranial bleed, having complained of feeling groggy and unwell prior to going into convulsions at his home. Yesterday, the court heard evidence from two J&J chiefs. Both said they didn't have data on how many people had lost their lives worldwide as a result of getting the firm's vaccine. And vaccine safety officer Dr. Louis Humberto said there was no link between Roy's death and their jab. He said, a single case may be tragic, it may be compelling. We take every case seriously, particularly this case where a healthy man of a young age dies. But from a scientific point of view, a single case is not sufficient for proof. But Kira Devine, for Roy's family, said it was clearly a case of 2 + 2 = 4, and the young and healthy man's death was caused by the jab. It continues. That inquest continues. And finally, it's in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. A beach walker says he filmed a mythical sea creature in Ireland to rival Scotland's Loch Ness Monster. Dean Beattie told how he saw the bizarre long-necked beast a few dozen yards offshore. The bemused barber managed to video the apparition for a few seconds before his phone died. But the clip shows what appears to be a large serpent-like creature with its head out of the water. What it appears to be to me is a large branch. But anyway, it doesn't look like a large serpent at all. It looks like a branch that's falling off a tree and is floating in the water. But anyway, the strange sighting was made, where would you believe it? Yes, of course, off the coast of Donegal. Mr. Beattie, who's 31, said it looks exactly the same as the original pictures of the Loch Ness Monster. It's not the best of videos, as my phone died when I started to record it, but it wasn't a swan, a seal, or anything I've ever seen. We sat and watched it for 20 minutes, at least, going underwater, then resurfacing a minute or so later around 20 yards away. Then it just disappeared from sight. I'm as curious as anyone would be. The more I compare, the more it looks like the original Loch Ness, I can't say that word, Loch Ness monster photo. He told whatsthejam.com, I feel like going back to see if I can see it again. So where did he see it? It's off the coast of Donegal. I don't have anything more specific. Have you seen the creek? Oh, I wish they'd give us more specific. I don't know where it is. No, it's not in the article. But anyway, I'm not doubting the young man for a second, but it looks, to all intents and purposes, it's just like a branch floating in the water. But anyway, it's serpent-like, and it disappeared and all that. What, do you know where that was? Have you seen it? Let's try and track this down. We'll try and search for Donegal's Loch Ness Monster, or Donegal Bay Monster, or wherever it might be. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491. The shared ownership scheme is aimed at people on lower incomes who could not afford to buy their own house. Under the scheme, the local authority would buy part of the home and you would buy the other part, and then you make payments on a mortgage to the part you purchased and pay the rent to the local authority for the other part. Jackie joins us now. Jackie, is that the scheme that you got involved with or have been looking
into? Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Jackie.
Greg, sorry, I just missed the question there.
The shared ownership scheme, is this something that you've tried, you've been involved in or tried to get on? Talk to me about it.
Greg, I got myself into the shared ownership scheme, I suppose, because I was a single parent. I only worked 20 hours a week. I was divorced, and I suppose for me, it was the only way I could be able to have a home for my children, my two children at the time. Then they were very young. Do you know what I mean? So it was the best option for me at the time.
And it ran from 1991 to 2011. It's no longer in situ as far as I'm aware. So you entered it pretty much late in the scheme. Is that right?
So at that stage, Greg, you know, as you just said that, when it was running out, there I was coming on to it, like kind of late 2010, 2011. Do you know, so I'm even surprised at that, because at that stage, as you were saying, it was finishing up.
So what was the agreement then?
And then there I was starting into it, you know.
Yeah, I get you. I know what you're saying. And it was a sunset scheme at that point. So what was in it for you, or what was the arrangement that you had?
Well, I was led to believe whenever I got into the shared ownership scheme that it was like a council loan. But like 20 years later, I was going to own the home. Do you know? So what I done at the time is I paid like a deposit of 23,000. You know, and then the balance was 135, and over 20 years I was going to have this paid for.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's what I was led to believe.
So you thought, did you feel that every time you were paying your monthly payment, that was you slowly but surely acquiring the ownership of the house?
100%.
And what is the reality now, 13, 14 years later?
Yeah, well, the reality is now, Greg, unfortunately, a few years ago, I done my best. I fell into a little bit of difficulty.
We all did.
But, you know, only for a few months, do you know what I mean? I quickly got back on, and you know, but then I had to go and have a meeting with the council.
Yes.
And they were saying to me basically for me to go and have financial and legal advice. And it's only at that point when I did go and have the legal advice, and then I had to go back to them for another meeting. So what happened is I went and had the financial advice, and then I went and got the legal advice. The legal advice, the solicitor at the time, you know, you got a voucher and you picked a local solicitor. So I went to the guy and he said, do you pay property tax? And I says, I do. Is it up to date? I says, it is. And he said, you know, I'm a bit baffled here. I said, because this property doesn't even belong to the council.
Wow. Okay.
Do you know, and it's on a 99-year lease.
So
I mean, how interesting is that?
Who owns the house then? Not the actual person's name, don't get me wrong. It's like, is it a private?
No, I will not do that, Greg. Greg, the thing is with the house that I was told, I never knew this at the time. I was told that there is two different folios to the house. One belongs to an ex-builder. The other belongs to some lady down in Bunbeg.
Wow, okay.
you know.
So the council actually don't own this house at all?
That's right.
So you've been paying monthly £650 a month for up until recently. That's increased. So what are you purchasing? Are you renting or are you buying part of the house? Because you've put a deposit down here.
I know.
So what is your stake in this house then? Or are you just a renter?
I'm basically, do you know what? It just all seems that you only own a half of a house.
Right.
And then you've to, so when I went back to the council, Greg, was, you know, just to go back for, just to see how I got on, they said, well, the other option for me is I could hand the house back. Now, at this stage, Greg, I had a...
Right, Jackie, I've lost the line there. I wonder, can we reconnect with Jackie? If you can hear me, Jackie, hang up there and we'll call you back again because it is an interesting story. And by the way, whilst we're waiting for Jackie to reconnect, if any of you have been in a similar situation or can offer advice, please let us know. This is actually relating to housing as well. I'll just throw this one out here for your consideration while we wait for Jackie. Well, Jackie's back with us as well. Jackie, sorry.
I don't know what happened there,
it's
Greg.
It's all right, dear. Don't worry.
Apologies.
Now, we were at the point whereby the council said you can give the house back. That's where you were when the line cut.
That is right. So I was in, and I actually would have been in with a local politician, a local TD. And the options were I could either hand the house back. Could you imagine after me paying $108,000 to date, hand the house back, so all that money, all the years and of everything I put into this home, hand it back, and then I would be referred on to just paying rent, which would nearly be as much as I was paying in a mortgage, because they felt the fact that I got into difficulty, maybe I wouldn't be able to continue on.
Right, so at this time...
And Greg?
Yes, Jackie?
The other option was... Sorry, Greg, we're talking over you there.
No problem.
But I have to say, the other option was, Greg, that I could actually take out and renew the loan, the mortgage, for another 20 years.
But you've paid at this point now, right, if my maths are correct, you've paid €131,000 towards this house, including the deposit, with a view that you were maybe were purchasing this. What stake do you have in this property now, having €138,000 invested in it, not to mention the upkeep and maintenance, which I presume is at least partly your responsible?
That's all my responsibility,
right.
And I have it up, yeah.
What do you own currently then?
Well, as far as I believe, nothing.
Okay.
Now, I have been sent, Greg, on a wild goose chase this last couple of years between local politicians, a right few of them in Donegal here, and solicitors, back to my own original solicitor, and nobody wants to bother about it.
Well,
I can't get help at all, Greg, with us.
Yeah, and we're hoping someone listening has been through this can understand. The shared ownership scheme was set out as follows, and this is very clear. The local authority would buy part of the house or buy part of the home, and you would buy the other part. Now, the local authority, according to the legal advice you have no stake in this property at all. It's two other private individuals that part.
That's what I was told.
The house that's been your home for 14, 15 years.
Yeah. Greg, 2011, what is that? That's 13 years,
13 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, have you got the option to buy out the local authority's share of this home? Because that also was part of the provision. You had to do it within 30 years. Have you costed how much it would cost to buy out the other parties in this house? Or is that even an option that's been put on the table for you?
Well, that's the two options I was given.
Have you been given a cost for buying out the other parties?
Well, it never came to that.
Right, okay.
Right, because I guess while I was there, I was just so upset. Do you know when you're so upset, you just can't hear what's been said as such like that. But I mean, I do know that that was the options. And I thought, I can't give up my home, our home, after paying that kind of money. You know, imagine just throwing it away and a whim and like starting all over again. And, you know, it'd never be our home.
And also really as well, we mentioned figures, effectively from the original value of the house to now, you're actually 20,000 short of having paid the total cost of the property at the time you moved into it too. So, you know, it would be hard pill to swallow then to try and find another 100 grand or something. Yep, that line's failed on us again. We're talking about the shared ownership scheme. It's now defunct. It ran from 1991 until 2011. Jackie was probably one of the last to get in on that scheme. It's no longer obviously open to new applicants. The scheme was laid out, according to citizens' information, the scheme was laid out that the council would buy part of the home and the tenant would buy the other part. You then would make payments on the mortgage for the part of the purchase that you had, the part you purchased, and then pay rent to the local authority for the other part. And the option there was to buy back the local authority share in the house over time until you owned the home. Now, apparently, according to Jackie, she's been told that, having looked at the documentation, she doesn't own, the council doesn't own the property. There's two other people with a shared interest in this home. Also, it's not really clear if she's written down any value of that by being a loyal tenant to the council, so to speak, and how much it might cost for her to buy it out altogether. But she's already paid, which would have been very difficult to find in 2010, 2011, a €23,000 deposit. And since she's paid €108 in rent, effectively, or mortgage, I'm not really quite sure of the breakdown of that. But she has had no assistance from the legal profession, she feels, local councillors or TDs. And you can imagine, she's in a bind here. She doesn't know what way to go, what to do, what her rights are, or effectively what the status is of the property. Jackie, are you back? No?
I'm back. I don't know. Obviously, my phone
don't
is...
Don't you worry about it. So,
giving me a hard time this morning, Greg.
What can people help you with at this point, or what message do you want to get out there, Jackie?
Well, you know, for me to actually ring you guys, you know, Greg, I need your help on this one, because you know what? I have literally been sent on a wild goose chase from pillar to post, and I can't seem to get help to clear this problem up. So what I really want is, I want to be able to hand this home, our home, to one of my children, and whatever such time that is, and not them left with a mess that it's still in some builder's name or some other lady way out in the coast of Donegal. You know, I want, look, they are aware of the situation, but they don't do nothing about it. I don't know why, but the council. But, you know, I want the property to be in my name. You know, I want the property to be in my name. And the fact that there's only, like, about, I mean, there's little or nothing left in this property to be paid. You know, what I'd be looking for is them at this stage, after the breach that they have done, you know,
Okay.
I was led to believe that, you know, I didn't know nothing about land registry.
Another caller says, I'm in the same... So, sorry, in relation to the house, right, the house is in your name and the council's name, but the land is in someone else's name. Is that it?
No, Greg, there's nothing in the council's name or my name.
Okay, right. A caller says, I'm in the same situation with shared ownership with the council, but that's not the same situation. That would be relatively simple. Your situation is that you don't seem to have any ownership of the property, and there's two other parties named on the deeds. A caller says, maybe contact the financial ombudsman, as she was missold a product. I mean, that is certainly something I would pursue in tandem with everything else you're doing, is speak to the financial ombudsman.
Well, I have done that, Greg, recently. Mm-hmm. Right. I have done that recently. I have put a complaint in recently, because it was, I mean, I've waited long enough without getting any response. So, Greg, really what I'm looking for, you know, is there something you're going to do? Are you going to contact? Do you contact the councillor?
No, of course. We'll make inquiries with your permission, and you've given us that as much as we can, and try and get some clarity. I think you deserve some clarity in your situation
at this point,
because, you know, say, for instance, also, that you wanted to move away. What could you realise from that house? In other words, you know, would you own 40% of the house if it was sold, 50%, 10%? You know, say, for instance, you wanted to move to Portugal.
Exactly.
Do you have any stake or value in this asset? You do, according to the scheme, you must own part of the house, but that's not stated on any documentation that you own part of the house.
Not definitely not, because it's not an even their name to have sold it to me in the first place.
It'd be very interesting to contact your mortgage company and see who they have down as owner on the deeds. That's something I'd pursue as well. Okay, we'll leave it with us, Jackie. You are in quite the bind. I'm not 100% sure what we can do, but we'll try as much as we can to use our contacts to get some information. And I know we're in the last chance saloon, because you have to be sometimes desperate to go
down
this
route.
Yeah,
and I am kind of desperate now at this stage.
All right.
Greg, thank you so much for taking the call this morning.
No, that's what we're here for, Jackie. Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Look after yourself.
Thank you so much.
Be resolved. All right, take care. Right, okay. That is it feels like it's potentially a very unique situation, but we already have one listener who is part of that shared ownership scheme. As I say, it's gone for 13 years now. But staying with housing, this listener says, myself and my daughter have been made homeless. We were told that we were being evicted due to my landlord's son coming home. This is a case I'd be familiar with. They were given that as a reason. Now, after the fact, they've seen that the house is up on daft and the rent is far in excess of what the former tenants were paying. We've been homeless now since the 1st of September. And the property was registered with the RTB and all that kind of stuff. What do you do in that situation? So they were mum and daughter in the house. The owner of the house says, look, I'm going to have to ask you to leave, which is one of the reasons you can ask people to leave, because my son's coming home from afar and I want this property for him. And then you find yourself a month or 2 months later, and you notice that very same house that was your home isn't for the son, or at least isn't for the son anymore. It's now up on a property rental website for double the price that the original tenants were paying. Again, calling on the knowledge and advice of our listeners more broadly, what is the situation there? A caller says, I know for a fact that landlords in Donegal are evicting Irish tenants to put in Ukrainians just to get the €800 tax-free, and they're guaranteed that payment. Why has there not been a public inquiry into the defective block crisis? Second homes, holiday homes, farmhouses, commercial buildings are not part of the scheme. The crisis has caused such mental and financial upset. Greg, on cutting of the tree, there is an extra, this is as it relates to the controversial decision to cut down a 90-year-old oak tree to make way for a cycle path. But a caller says it's a bigger story than that. Greg, on cutting of the tree, there is an extra car lane going in there as well as a cycle lane. It's to ease traffic. Also, roundabout at Ballyrain School going to be replaced with lights, and the tree is going to be donated to local schools to make crafts and furniture, etc. That's according, apparently, to the TII. Right, so huge overrun on the Children's Hospital. No end date in sight. 1,600,000 overspend. 336,000 on a bike shelter at Leinster House that doesn't seem to offer much protection from the elements at all. We've a €1.4 million security hut, which is not yet finished. We don't know what the story is there. And as I say, €2.2 billion for the new children's hospital. And now, of course, maybe it's not in the same space, but €190,000 for a fitness coach for TDs and senators and staff for the Dáil. A contract has gone out for that, or tenders are being invited. Deputy Thomas Pringle joins us on the programme now. Thomas, what has been the reaction, I suppose, amongst, you know, workers in the Dáil, TDs and all that kind of stuff to these types of controversies? Or what's your reaction to it, I suppose, is the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, largely the reaction has been kind of shock, Greg, that these are the costs, I suppose. And sometimes you see some of these things work going on around the place, and you don't think that this could be the cost. I mean, it's lottery numbers, really, like that you're talking about in relation to it. And, I think it's symptomatic of the whole way that the government is operating, is that there's no actual control over it. And the idea is just to waste money and get money out there. And you'd wonder as well, like, who is benefiting from it, because the construction companies and stuff like that there, I don't know exactly what the situation is, and we're getting to the bottom of it maybe through the Public Accounts Committee now at the moment. But it seems that maybe that these companies didn't have to tender for it, or that they were on a kind of a holding tender with the with the OPW, and they just basically, the OPW said, look, there's a job we want done, just do it, kind of thing. And it's mind-boggling when you think of it, and rightly so. I think people are very angry and very annoyed about it, and they can be seen right from a bike shed in Leinster House right up to the children's hospital. And I remember being in the Dáil in 2014, 2015, and Mick Wallace, who was there at that time, told the minister that the children's hospital was going to cost at least €2 billion, and they laughed at him. And they said, you're crazy. There's absolutely no way that's going to happen. And here we are now. And he was actually wrong, and that it's probably going to be about €2.3 billion by the time it's finished.
Yeah, and just I'm thinking of the RTE scandal and how it was exposed, and then these latest shocking spends that have really peed the public off, especially the struggling public, and you'll understand that. But it does make me question too, and you're here to answer it, what is the role of the opposition and the independents that we send to the Dáil? The hope is that, they hold the government to account, that they are our eyes and ears on the ground. Often we speak to the likes of yourself and others after the fact, because maybe a journalist has uncovered it, or there's a freedom of information, or a whistleblower, or what have you. Like, do you not think the opposition, their role is to sort of be preemptive of this kind of stuff and say, I wonder what's going on outside there. Why has that security shelter got a funny roof? I wonder how much that might cost. Do you get me? It's not a criticism, but yeah. I think we're sending you guys up at great cost as well, Thomas. And we want, I wonder what is your role? Is it to comment after the fact?
Yeah, it's certainly big. I think part of the problem is that there's so much going on and so much happening every day that it's very hard to stay focused on a particular issue and keep it going. Whereas journalists through the FOI and use of FOI can do that. And the reality is that we have to use FOI as well to try and get information out of the departments. Again, I've had a number of FOI requests into different departments and stuff like that there. And it takes, they use the process to delay the answers and delay the answers. And it could take 6 or 8 months to get actually an FOI back. And then you have to trawl through it to get the information there. And, I'm not making excuses. Well, it's probably I'm making excuses, but I'm not, it takes such a long time and things move on so quickly that it's hard to get at that. But I do think there's a role in the Oireachtas and we all are a bit guilty of this, where we could give the committees actually more time and more power, and you can delve down into that stuff. Like, a lot of time in the Dáil chamber, it's about highlighting the bigger issues and the global issues, and there isn't time to tease down into them, and committee work, I think, is vitally important and should be given more attention. But the reality is that the politicians don't give it attention, but then the media don't give it any attention. Yeah. And that then, so it just becomes self-sustaining. And you see then, the Public Accounts Committee now getting a bit of attention as it's looking at these issues. But that's the kind of work that could be going on at committee stage all the time, and committee work.
But as you say, no one might be watching it on Oireachtas TV, and there might not be a journalist sitting in there covering it. No, I do understand that. But then we have this situation whereby we've got all these arms of government and what have you, and control and auditor generals and all this kind of stuff. And yet, to figure out why we wasted so much public money, as some would see it, it seems now they're talking about getting an external group to come in, extra money, probably another €300,000 or €400,000, to say, to come in and figure out what went wrong. Like, what can we do to have more sort of oversight, accountability, end-to-end management of projects within the many, many in the civil service that we have, rather than having to farm out hundreds of thousands more euro for another company to come in and tell them why people aren't doing their jobs?
Yeah, I mean, that I heard that on the radio this morning, and I think that's just absolutely crazy. I mean, the Controller and Auditor General is there already, who audits all these bodies and reports to the Dáil, to the Public Accounts Committee. And I haven't been on the Public Accounts Committee myself, so I'm not 100% familiar with it, but from talking to people who have been, like Catherine Connolly and stuff like that, they're very complimentary of the controller in Ottawa General and the work that they do. And I think more could be given to that, and he could actually be used to actually generate those reports. And but you know, a lot of the time, I think what's happening here, when you see they go out to tender to get a report back, that'll kick it down the road for another 6 months or 8 months or whatever, and they'd be hoping that the issue would have died down by that stage. And when you look at how the cycle works, that works for them all the time, you know. And we do need to have, you know, we do need to have a point where they actually are made to be to take control and to be popular. And I've seen it, like contractors as well. Like I've seen contractors do crazy contracts, and then they get the next contract that comes out from either a council or a government and that as well. And, you know, and until there's a responsibility, like, I mean, surely if the contractor, like, for example, say the contractor on the Children's Hospital, if the contractor is unsatisfactory, well, that should factor into the next contract that they apply for. And we always hear from government departments that they aren't allowed to do that. I believe that they actually are, if they were willing to do it.
There's a bit of a blind tendering process, though, isn't it, whereby the lowest bid gets it? I'll take your point.
Yeah, that is a problem. The lowest bid tender being successful, that is a huge problem as well. And it means then that you can't take into account any of the other information that you might know about the ability of the contractor to actually meet it or all that as well, too, and that has to be taken into account.
But speaking of account and accountability, the another frustration that the public might have is who is responsible. We see this with crisis in the health service. We see it with local road projects that overspend by 10 million. Who's responsible for that? Is it the contractor? Is it the project manager? Is it anyone? With this, and I'm not looking for, you know, heads in the stick, people to be thrown into jail. That's not what I'm talking about. But ultimately, no one will be found personally responsible for €336,000 being spent on a bike shed. No one will be found responsible for the massive overspend in the Children's Hospital. And these are the ones we've heard about. So why is that? Or why is it structured in such a way that no one is culpable? A decision is made by the HSE or by the this, that and the other. But ultimately, you don't know. These are faceless people who are insulated from any. And if there is any danger that someone might be getting close to them, they're allowed to retire and go off into the sunshine and be no longer culpable. That's surely an area that the public's demand for reform should be met.
Yeah, and if you look at it, like any acts of the Department of Health and stuff like that, there are ultimately the responsibility of the minister. That's the way it's legally set up. As, you know, and the minister that signed off in the Children's Hospital and signed the contract for Go Ahead was actually Simon Harris, who is now Taoiseach. And you know, so if there's accountability, surely that's where the accountability should be. That, and you know, especially when it was flagged up to everybody that this wasn't the way to go and that it was going to end up very expensive. You know, so, and we do need to get that. We do need to get that situation. We need that to happen. We need to have people taking responsibility. Like, you know, a lot is made of, you know, in the UK, where a government minister is caught doing something, they resign straight away. Whereas in Ireland, we don't see that at all. Like, and that's something that we need to get to, a system where people are accountable, and it has to start at the top, I think, as well, to be held accountable and to be accountable for public money, which is all of our money.
You talked about those public committees. We had a situation where, as RTE, were dragged over the coals through them last year. The terrible things were exposed. I mean, obviously people focused on flip-flops and all that kind of stuff, but the amount of overspending and all that kind of stuff that went on. And like, where's this? I'd like to know where the scrutiny is for the government's decision to effectively reward that organisation with €700 million. Like, what's the key performance indicators there for that? What's that for? What's the justification? What does that mean? Is that for salaries? Is it for jobs? Is it for program? Like, where is the accountability? That's €700 million, which is far in excess of the bike shed and the security hut. Where's the accountability in that? What does that mean? Do you know what that means effectively? Is that they can actually say, right, that's fine. You can do whatever you want and get rewarded €700 million, and then effectively shut down independent media because they have a competitive advantage in the advertising market. Because they can undercut if they wish, because they have the government's money sitting in the back pocket.
Yeah. I think a real opportunity was missed in terms of RTE, where RTE should have been removed from the commercial sector entirely, I believe, and that you know, because it is unfair competition, and there's no doubt about that. And we should actually fund RTE through, from the public purse, to provide public service broadcasting, and then let commercial enterprises deal with the commercial stuff, and that would open up a funding issue. It would solve funding issues for both sides, I think, as well, too. And you know, but you see, even still, the government is running, trying to protect RTE and trying to hide from, you know, from bogus self-employment in RTE and the costs that is going to have.
That's going to be a massive scandal.
Yeah.
Listen, last question before I let you go. Come in from a listener. Does Deputy Pringle know what the holdup is at Killybegs Community Hospital? His work there seems to be at a standstill, and the hospital can't. The hospital can take around 34 beds. It's down to 13, as this has a knock-on effect of freeing patients from Sligo and Letterkenny University Hospital. Sorry, I'm not trying to ambush you on that one. Are you familiar with that? Do you know what the hold-up is?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if it is a hold-up. I'll look into that and see. But I know that the hospital was, there's work being carried out in the hospital, and the capacity was severely reduced while that was ongoing, and they were juggling around the beds to try and keep things going. I'm not sure what the date is for the conclusion of that work. I'll find out.
Yeah, we can all look into that.
You know, Greg.
All right, thanks very much for your time, Deputy Thomas Pringle there. Gorla says, everything is a disgrace, according to Thomas Pringle. What is his solution to these things? Any TD can go on and say disgraceful, etc., but he have that job, they need constructive solutions. And that's the point I was trying to make in terms of, you know, I think people believe they send TDs down there to be the eyes and ears of the public to try and ensure such things don't happen. If they're spending so much on a bike shed, why do they need a gym? Asks a caller. Greg, don't forget to mention the amount that was given to RTE on top of all the money that was squandered. I did mention that. Thanks, a couple of you mentioning that as well. All right, it is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Another packed 2 hours on the way. Don't go anywhere, because we're going to bring you now, in a couple of minutes, the very latest news, and also we'll have the obituary notices.